You are listening to BensTorah.com.
Very often I feel like Purim escapes us. Purim escapes us because it's such a busy day. We don't have 7 days, we don't have 8 days to sit, we don't have 8 days, even the meal that we do have, how often is our mind in the places where we're able to contemplate the day? So very often Purim comes and goes, and we're not able to tap into what Purim really has to offer. And perhaps Purim has more to offer us in today's day and age, in the lives that we live, than any other of the Yom Tov. But yet it escapes us because we don't have time for it. So how appropriate it is that we spend some time together tonight learning different aspects of Purim, different aspects that we should be thinking about over the next few days, over the next few days when we are celebrating Purim, but perhaps be able to take something away from Purim that could last us past Purim throughout the year. But I want to begin with the tainus that we're about to embark on in a few hours. A very strange tainus Esther. It's not clear whether this tainus even appears in Megillas Esther. It's a debate between the Rishonim whether any tainus that's mentioned in that Megillah is actually a precursor to the tainus that we're going to fast tomorrow, or is the tainus that we're going to fast tomorrow nothing to do with the tainusim that are mentioned in the Megillah. The tainusim that are mentioned in the Megillah took place in Chodesh Nisan. We're celebrating, we're going to observe it in Chodesh Adar. What a connection does it have? And according to many, yes, it has nothing to do with the Tanesim that were observed in Chodesh Nisan. In fact, it has to do with Tanesim that we assume took place before the wars, before the battle that Klal Yisrael embarked upon after already Haman was already home. But it's a bothersome Tanes. As someone came into my office and I said, it couldn't be a more appropriate time as I was preparing the shiur this morning, a member of the shul comes to the office and says, I don't understand Tainus Esther. Why are we fasting Tainus Esther? I don't know if he was trying to get a cool out of me. I don't know what he was trying to do. He said, I don't understand Tainus Esther. Why are we fasting Tainus Esther? Every other fast, we're commemorating something which still affects us. Something which happened to Klal Yisrael, calamity happened to Klal Yisrael, the churban, whatever it might be, that something which affects us, something disastrous happened. Here, what are we fasting for? We're fasting because of something that almost happened, but it didn't happen. The Rabbanu Shalom saved us. So what are we doing? Why are we fasting? Let's remember Purim. Let's celebrate Purim. And forget about Tainus Esther. Why do we have to observe Tainus Esther before? And the truth is, to understand, it's a great question. And many have spilled much ink on this question, and we'll just touch the surface of it this evening. But we have to take a step back. We have to see, we have to point out that there are many differences when it comes to Tanis Esther, as opposed to other Tanesim. When it comes to other Tanesim, for instance, we know that we will never push up a Tanis. Right? The Gemara tells us we're not Magdim Tanesim, we only push them off. Tisha B'Av falls on Shabbos, you push it off. We don't want to be Magdim Poranias. We push it off hoping that we're not going to have to observe it. When it comes to Tainus Esther, falls out on Shabbos, Purim falls out on Shabbos, what do? We push Tainus Esther up. Why are we pushing Tainus Esther up? Of all the Tanesim, this is what we push up. Even more than that, there are a few days which we might not be so familiar with, but there's something called Megillas Tainus. Megillas Tainus, they are a list, it's a Megillah from the Tanoim. The Tanoim wrote the Megillah of a number of days which we're not allowed to fast on. And those days you're not allowed to fast on, one of them is Purim. But the Megillah says you're not allowed to fast on Purim, but you're not allowed to fast the day before Purim, and you're not allowed to fast the day after Purim. So how was Tainus Esther even ever come about? How are they misakin a day, a Tainus, on a day which, alpi the Tanoim, we're not even allowed to be fasting? And no fast would ever be doch on one of these days in Megillah's Tainus. Yet Chazal decided, the Chacham, whoever misakin Megillah, Tainus Esther decided, Tainus Esther is important enough that we'll even fast on a day which we're not really supposed to be fasting. And perhaps the greatest question which we've discussed the past week or so, but a very powerful question. Not getting involved in the intricacies of the Gemara. The Gemara, the very first Gemara in Maseches Megillah, discusses the different days which the Megillah could be read. Gemara says, different situations might require that we don't only lay on Yud Dalet and Tesvav and Shushan, we might have to lay on Yud Aleph, Yud Beis. Then the Gemara says, Where do we know this from? And the Gemara is busy bringing psukim from the Megillah, showing that you could read the Megillah on Yud Aleph, you could read the Megillah on Yud Beis, you could read the Megillah on Yud Dalet, you could read it on Tesfos. Then the Gemara says, but you forgot one day. What about Yud Gimel? How do I know you could read Megillah on Yud Gimel? The Gemara says, it's obvious you could read the Megillah on Yud Gimel. Why? Again, it's a question in the Rishonim, but according to many Rishonim, why? Because it's Tainus Esther. Of course you could read it on Tainus Esther. Now this seems puzzling. On Tainus Esther, we're going to read the whole point of Tainus Esther is the state of calamity that we were in, the state of destitution that Klal Yisrael was facing, their lives were at stake. That's the day we're going to read about the salvation. It's so obvious, I don't even have to bring a pasuk to tell me I can read the Megillah on Yud Gimel. I would say the opposite. The one day you can't read the Megillah is when we're commemorating the day that we were mourning. That's the day I'm allowed to read the Megillah. I don't even need a pasuk. What's going on over here? So I want to take a look at perhaps the most important Gemara and Megillah, the most important for us, in terms of when we're looking for messages, looking for lessons to take out of the Yom Tov of Purim. So we're celebrating a salvation. We're celebrating a Yeshua. Now we have to understand, if we're going to celebrate that Yeshua, we have to understand what originally put Klal Yisrael into that situation that they were deserving to be destroyed. If we're going to celebrate the salvation and that Klal Yisrael ultimately did tshuva, God only saved them because of their tshuva. So what were they doing tshuva from? What got them in that position to be doing? So the Gemara has a discussion about this, and the truth is Chazal, in many different places, discuss it, and there are different nuances in every single place. But we'll take a look at where the Gemara discusses it. The Gemara says as follows, a very important Gemara. Gemara says that Talmidim of Rav Shimon Bar Yochai came in to Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, and they asked him as follows, Shalu Talmidim of Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. What did Klal Yisrael do at the time of Mordechai and Esther that they deserved to be destroyed? So Shimon Bar Yochai was a tough Rebbe. He wasn't going to give anything easily. So he says, Imroten, why are you coming to me for the answer? Nothing's served on a silver platter. You figure it out yourself. You can't figure it out, you come back to me. Imroten, what do you think? What do you think that they did that deserved this terrible gzardin? So the Amrulo, they respond to him as follows. Mipnei shenenu misudaso shel oisar rosh. We're all familiar with this, because they went to the party. Now what was so bad about going to the party? It's not so easy to find out what was so bad about going to the party. Different suggestions, different mamari chazal. Some say perhaps they were serving bishalakel. Perhaps the yayin, the wine wasn't kosher, although other mamari chazal tell us that Mordechai was washing over the wine. It's not so simple. There are even those that suggest there was no music at the party, a party without music. Why? Because they knew the Jews wouldn't come. If there's music, b'shir lo yishtu yayin, you're not allowed to drink together in a party house with non-Jews. So what was so wrong with the Suda? Not so clear. So the Talmidim tell Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, it's because of the Suda. Rav Shimon Bar Yochai says, that's good, I like it, it's a good pshat, but you have to say better. Why? Because if it was specifically because of the Suda, who engaged in the Suda? Only the people of Shushan. Why was all of the Jewish people, why were their lives at stake? What did they do? If you would tell me it was just Shushan, I would agree with you. But what about the rest of the Jewish people? So says the Gemara, Amru lo, and Morata, so, okay, we try. You're saying it's not a good pshat. So, Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, you come, you tell me what the pshat is. Amar lahem, mipnei sheishtachavu latzelem. Because they bowed down to the tzelem. According to most Rishonim, this is the tzelem, going back to Nebuchadnezzar. And again, according to many Rishonim, we're not talking about real Avodah Zarah over here. If we were talking about real Avodah Zarah, so Klal Yisrael wouldn't have done it, they would have given up their lives. We're talking about something, perhaps, which is me'ein Avodah Zarah, a taste of Avodah Zarah. Again, not 100% clear what the chet is. And it's not like Rav Shimon Bar Yochai rejects the first answer. He doesn't say, because they were nenet, the Suda, you're going to destroy, you're going to wipe out the entire people. He doesn't say that. He says it's a good pshat for enjoying, for being nenet from the Suda, you're actually right. Klal Yisrael would have been worthy of destruction, but it would only be the people of Shushan. Because being nenet from the Suda, a Suda which we're not entirely sure, with Jews living in Golos, just trying to go under the radar, not being noticed. It's worthy of destruction, Kliya, because of that. The Gemara continues. The Gemara says, okay, so you bow down to the Tzela. So if they bow down to the Tzela, they bow down to the Avodah Zarah. They really bow down to Avodah Zarah. Again, unclear whether it was real Avodah Zarah, but so why were they saved? If they're deserving of destruction, they're deserving of destruction. Why are you favoring them? Says the Gemara, Amr lahem heim lo asu ela lifnim. They only did it out of fear. They didn't really agree to the Avodah Zarah. They did it out of fear. They did it out of fear, Rashi says. So, afa kadosh baruch hu lo asa imahem ela lifnim. You want to know why they weren't destroyed? Because they never really meant to bow down to the Avodah Zarah. Why were they doing it? Because they were afraid. So since they were only doing it because they were afraid, so the Baruch Hashem was only doing it lifnim. What does that mean? The Baruch Hashem was only doing it lifnim? Rashi says, to scare them. So there was never a gzar din? How do we understand this Gemara? The Gemara is saying that Klal Yisrael never really served the Avodah Zarah, never really meant to bow down to the Tzelem, and therefore they were never really deserving of being destroyed. So they weren't worthy of being destroyed, therefore the Ribbono Shel Olam only did what we call an oinesh bifnim. What does that mean? He scared them. It would seem to be from this Gemara that the Ribbono Shel Olam never intended to punish Klal Yisrael. Never intended to destroy them. The entire point of the oinesh, the entire point of Haman, was merely to come and frighten Klal Yisrael. To scare Klal Yisrael out of a state of a slumber that they were in. That was the entire point of the Einish. The Ribbono Shel Olam never meant to do it. They weren't deserving of Kliyah. Pashup Shad in the Gemara. They weren't deserving of being destroyed. But the Ribbono Shel Olam had to scare them. What does this mean, the Ribbono Shel Olam had to scare them? So I would suggest to you as follows. The miracle of Purim, the Ribbono Shel Olam was not coming to punish us, as the Gemara indicates. The Ribbono Shel Olam was coming to teach us. He was coming to educate us. Now think about where Klal Yisrael are at this point. Klal Yisrael are at a point of transition. They're at a point where they're still in Golos. Perhaps the Beis HaMikdash has begun being rebuilt, but the Geula process still is at the very beginning, if yet that. And they're at a stage where the Gilui Shechina is being held back from them. Even when the Beis HaMikdash is going to be rebuilt, it's not going to be the same level of revelation that it was before. And Nevuah, prophecy, is coming to an end. And they understand that prophecy is coming to an end. Anshei Knesset HaGedolah with Mordechai was the end of prophecy. With the end, Malachi, around the same time, was the last of the prophets. So Klal Yisrael are in a new stage now. They're in a new situation, a situation that they've never been in before. Comes the Ribbono Shel Olam and says, I have to teach you how to live in such a situation. Because I would argue, I would suggest to you that you're right. Eating bishalakum, perhaps it could be legitimized in such a situation. Was there anything so wrong with going to the Suda? Again, perhaps every one of the chata'im, I'm not saying there weren't any, but in this situation, the king invites you, perhaps it could be legitimized. Bowing down to Tzelem, which is not real Avodah Zarah, again, you'd have to go through the sugyas, but perhaps it could be legitimized. That wasn't the problem here. The problem wasn't the particular chata'im that Chazal point out to us. The problem was the lifestyle that Klal Yisrael were now engaged in. The Ribbono Shel Olam sees Klal Yisrael thrust into the galus, and they have a new mindset. They have a mindset of the Ribbono Shel Olam has forsaken us. Now we're in a time of Hester Panim. We no longer live with God. And when we don't live with God, we have to live based on our Hishtablus. And if that means becoming friendly with the king and doing what the king says, we'll do what the king says. And not that that itself is so important. You could do what the king says. But you have to realize that God's still running the show. And the Ribbono Shel Olam was coming to teach them, I'm still here. You might not be able to see me, but I'm still here. But this we know is one of the essential themes of Purim. That the Ribbono Shel Olam is still running the show, he's still pulling the strings. That's a nace of Hester Pun. But I would argue to you tonight that the educational process that the Ribbono Shel Olam was going, that Klal Yisrael were undertaking right now, that Klal Yisrael was experiencing, was much deeper than that. It wasn't simply that God is still running the show in a state of Hester Panim. Yes, that true was something that Klal Yisrael learned. But the mechanism through which that works is something which Klal Yisrael understood. Because it's not just random. There's a system. There's a system how God runs the world, even in a time of Hester Pana. And Klal Yisrael had to be taught that system because they had never been in such a state before. So the Rebbe Shalom is teaching them perhaps what the Rambam tells us in Mor Nevuchim, what Rabbeinu Bechaya tells us at the beginning of Shara B'Tachon in the Kovas of Levavos, where Rabbeinu Bechaya tells us that the Rebbe Shalom will take care of you in times of Hester, and he'll be certain to watch over you in times of Hester. But there's one condition. You have to put your faith in it. If you take your faith away from God, the Hashkacha will go right out the window with the faith. If you put your faith in something else, that other thing will have your destiny. Says Rabbeinu Bechaya, "Mipnei shem eino voteach belokim." If a person doesn't trust in the Rabbeinu Shalom, bezula so, but he trusts in something else other than the Rabbeinu Shalom, umi sheboteach bezulas Hashem, meisir ha'elokim hashkochosum eyalov. Scary words, perhaps words we don't think about, but words we're definitely supposed to be thinking about on Purim. God is telling us the secret. You want the hashkacha. You want to be able to say when something happens, this is what the Rebbeinu Shalom wanted to happen to me. This is the best thing for me. What's the trick? You have to believe that God is taking care of you. And that's what Klal Yisrael had to learn. The Rambam tells us the same thing. V'hine nira li ata ofen iyuni nifla me'od. An amazing idea. Anu kvar biyarnu bepirkei ha-hashkacha. Based on the spiritual intellect of a person, the spiritual capacity of a person, to that extent the Rebbeinu Shalom watches over him. The more you are thinking about God, the more that you are consumed with him during the day, the more that you attribute what happens in the world and to yourself to the Rebbeinu Shalom, the more he takes charge. The more you take away from him, the more you say that this was Teva working. So God says, you want to be in the hands of Teva? Let Teva take control. Let's see what happens. Now what pasuk does the Rambam quote of all the psukim to teach us this idea? Says the Rambam, this is what the Rebbeinu Shalom is telling us. Omer yis'alev istatarti panay mehem v'hoya lechol umitza'uhu roos rabos v'tzoros v'omer bayom ahu halo al ki ein elokai v'kirbi. There's no God amongst us. Mitza'uni harosa ela. That's why all these bad things are happening. Uba'er ki hastoras ponim anachnu si bosa. Because there's Hester ponim. Where does the Rebbeinu Shalom tell us? Tells the Rambam, v'hu omro v'anoichi haster aster ponim. The very pasuk that Chazal say, Esther min ha-Torah minayim. Where do we see the story of Esther in the Torah? Says the Gemara in Chulin, v'anoichi haster aster ponim. Says the Rambam, this is not simply telling you that the Rebbeinu Shalom is still there at a time of Hester. Yes, we know he's still there. We know he's still in control in time of Hester. But it's giving us the mechanism. It's giving us the tools to understand how the Rebbeinu Shalom will react with us. What a world of Teva looks like. How are Klal Yisrael supposed to engage in such a world? Says the Rebbeinu Shalom, "Anoichi haster aster ponim." The Rambam tells us that means based on your level of bitachon, based on the amount of effort and energy you put into your ruchni, as you put into your faith in the Rebbeinu Shalom, the amount you work on that, to that extent, and only to that extent, does God promise he will watch over us. A scary thought, but a thought that has to be contemplated. It's based on us. If we don't take charge, we don't work on our betachon, we don't work on that faith in God, so Rebbeinu Shalom says, you want to put your faith in your money? Let's see how well your money takes care of you. You want to put your faith in another person? Let's see if that person takes care of you. You want to put your faith in doctors? Let's see if the doctors take care of you. Of course, we do our ishtadlus, we go to doctors, we do everything we should. But our faith, where the ultimate Yeshua is going to come from, has to be from the Rebbe. And how does a person work on it? It's a hard concept. What do? You say it over to yourself a million times. I believe in God, I believe in God. How does a person work on it? It's betach. At that very point in history, as Anshe Knesset HaGedolah was ending up, they instituted for us the matbeya, the structure of tefillah. And tefillah is the answer.
The way that we enhance our bitachon, you think the Ribbono Shel Olam needs our tefillah? He doesn't know what we need? No, no, no. He knows what we need. We don't know who's going to supply it. So every day, three times a day, we say, we need das. Who's going to give me das? Atal choyne in l'adam das. We need parnasa. Who's going to give me parnasa? Baruch aleinu Hashem Elokeinu. The exercise of tefillah is precisely that. To inculcate within our psyche, even though we know it logically, but emotionally, that's what tefillah is there for. To make sure that that becomes a part of us. This is what I believe Rav Nosson says in the Medrash when he says, Lo ba haman a peladik medrash. Lo ba haman elazecher l'dert. What does it mean, Lo ba haman elazecher l'dert? Haman only came elazecher l'dert. What does that mean? As the Gemara told us, the Ribbono Shel Olam, we never did anything that deserved us to, made us deserving of being wiped out. We showed the Ribbono Shel Olam that we weren't living with him. We were putting our faith in the government, we were putting our faith in the Teva. We weren't putting our faith in God because we thought that He had left us. We thought in a world of Hester, He is not with us. So the Ribbono Shel Olam says, "Eini oise elo b'mifnit." I'm going to scare them. I'm going to show them that no matter who they think likes them, the king could like them, they could go to the Suda, they could bow down, they could be perfect civilians. It could all unravel. And you see, you can't put your faith in anyone else other than me. "Eini oise elo b'mifnit." The message of Purim is Zeicher L'Doros, to teach Klal Yisrael, L'Dorei Doros, to teach Klal Yisrael how to live in a world that we live in right now. How to live in a world of Hester. How to live in a world where we can't see the Ribbono Shel Olam, we can't feel the Ribbono Shel Olam. How do we interact with Him? How do we engage Him? It's through tefillah, it's through putting our faith in Him, through putting our trust in Him. And that, I believe, is why Tainus Esther is such a fundamental part of Purim. Tainus Esther is a day where you can read the Megillah. Tainus Esther, yes, you're right, it's commemorating something which didn't end up happening. We were davening and fasting because our lives were at stake, but we came through salvation, so why are we fasting? Because as the Rambam tells us, the reason we're fasting is because the main part of Purim is not like Hanukkah necessarily, where we're just sitting, remembering the nates, and we sit around and celebrate the nes that happened to us. The main point of Purim, says the Rambam, "Vitzivanu likros haMegillah beOnasa." We read the Megillah kidei lahazkir shvachav shel Hakadosh Baruch Hu, to thank the Ribbono Shel Olam, uchuo she'asa, for the salvation He did, v'hayakarov lishavaseinu, and that He was close to our feet. The point of the Purim is not simply to thank the Ribbono Shel Olam for the salvation He did so many centuries ago, but it's to remind ourselves how that salvation came about. Because Korav l'shavaseinu, because He was close to our tefillos, and our tefillos work. And we could live in a world where we could think to ourselves, are our tefillos really working? What's going on over here? Comes a Purim and teaches us our tefillos work. You want to know if the Ribbono Shel Olam seems to be so hester, seems to be so hidden. You want to know how to expose Him, you have to be mispal, you have to die. So we cannot celebrate a Purim without celebrating a Tainus Esther. Celebrating a Purim without a Tainus Esther would be half of it. We're celebrating a Yeshua of the Ribbono Shel Olam, but half the message that Chazal wanted to teach us was that this Yeshua came from someplace. It didn't come in a vacuum. It didn't come out of nowhere. It came because Karav l'shavaseinu, the Jews in a time of Hester upon him, where they didn't feel close to the Ribbono Shel Olam, they turned to tefillah, and the Ribbono Shel Olam responded. And He saved them. And just like He responded then, He can respond now. And if we go through a Purim and we don't think about this, how much have we lost? What Chazal wants us to understand from a Purim is the koach of our tefillah. What we could do in a world, again, which seems so void of God, and we could interact with Him. That's the message of Purim. And to think that we could go through a Purim and not think about that is a scary thought. This has to be on the forefront of our minds throughout the Yom of these days coming, throughout Tainus Esther and throughout Purim, thinking this wasn't a miracle of the past, it wasn't a Kriyas Yamtiv which perhaps we won't experience again, although Klal Yisrael will experience greater miracles, but perhaps something which we can't relate to. This wasn't the Yud Makos, It wasn't even a nace of Chanukah. This was the nace of Purim. And the message of Purim is, while we're still in this galus, while we're still feel detached from God, Karav l'shavasein. He's close to our tefillos, and if we are mispalel with that appropriately, we can take that mindset, and we let it affect not only our Tainus Esther, but our Purim, and the weeks after Purim, and the rest of the year, Be'ezus Hashem, we will be zoicha to put our faith in the Rabbanu Shalom, we will be zoicha to be mispalel appropriately to the Rabbanu Shalom, and no doubt, as He promises us, as Rambam taught us, we will no doubt reciprocate with answering all of our tefillos. I wish everyone a freilich of Purim.
You have been listening to a presentation of BensTorah.com.